The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit,
welcome back
telling
to the Fearless Podcast. How you doing
is
today,
a
brother?
Revolutionary.
Thank you. I'm doing well for the most part. I have a little tingling in my leg from a herniating disc, but other than that, I'm good.
Good, good. Well, so you're one of the first guests that we had on the Fearless Podcast. That was quite a while ago. That was episode 15, and we are episode 90.
Wow.
And when we
put me on for the 100th,
Well, I tried. It just didn't land like that.
Okay.
But when we last talked, I don't think you had landed in America yet.
No, maybe not. Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, time flies. But so we were discussing, is America still the land of opportunity? So this was before you got here, and a lot has happened. A lot has happened, obviously, in your life and even geographically and different things. A lot has happened here. So I thought we could revisit this whole topic. And I just wanted to kind of open it up to you to let you kind of take it wherever you want to take it, because you've had a lot of life happen. You've traveled a lot and you've seen a lot of America. You even got to see what Texas is like and even got to check out the Texas Boys homestead. But yeah, I'll just kind of open it up, and maybe you can update us since we last talked, kind of what has happened and where you're at and what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. I don't recall exactly where I was when we had our last podcast, because our life has just been so crazy. Like you mentioned, we have been moving around so much, you know, mainly due to being in ministry, but also just by stepping out in faith and going where we felt like God was taking us for our family's sake. And, you know, now we are in the United States. We live in a good state. We are able to homeschool. We are able to, for the first time, not be overtaken by the government wanting to take, you know, 50% of our money as taxes. We're really grateful for a lot of things. And, you know, honestly, we have been going through a time where so many things are just starting to clear up for us that we were under for so many years in Europe, the government regulation and oppression that really exists there. Some of it is here too, but to what degree we were really under, and the people in Europe don't know it. So yeah, I mean, where do you want me to start?
Well, you know, we were talking about, the reason I was so interested in your perspective is because you've been in three countries in Europe. I think it was Germany, Austria, and the Netherlands, correct?
Sweden,
that's it.
Yep.
Yeah, you were the Swedish homestead, duh.
Right, yeah.
A powerful perspective, being in Europe, living in Europe, homesteading, and trying to live an agrarian-type, slower, authentic, intentional lifestyle, and seeing the need to move to America. And there's lots of different opinions from people around the world, and they have different opinions about America. So now, maybe now that you're here, maybe we could start out by, you know, and you had visited here for extended periods of time and spoken and done different consulting and different things like that. But maybe update us on, is America all that you thought it would be?
I guess, so this might sound bad, but I don't mean it in a bad way at all. I came here with big hopes, but low expectations. Big hopes because I knew in some places you can still surround yourself with the right community. That's much harder in Europe. With big hopes because there are some places where you can live with more freedom still if you choose your state and home wisely. With big hopes because we came out of a country with the highest taxes in the world and low incomes. And I know that, you know, here you have significantly less taxes, and in some states you don't pay any state income tax even. I came with low expectations at the same time because of the times we were moving in. Things were crazy everywhere in the world, including the US, especially on a federal level. Low expectations because there's a cultural and spiritual war going on in the United States, and for, you know, like who is winning? You know, we're in such great need of spiritual awakening and revival. And so on one hand, great hopes, on the other hand, low expectations. And I have to say that I have been to see where God brought us to now, where we are at right now. For the most part, I've been positively surprised and blessed. And you know, wherever you go in the world, I've you know, like you said, lived in a few countries. Everybody always thinks it's better somewhere else, right? Mm-hmm. People always think that's better. You want to move there. And then, you know, they only hear one-sided stories. And you have people here, too, that think, oh, it's better. You know, I can say, actually, this is the first time me publicly saying this, but we are in Middle Tennessee right now. Last time people heard on our podcast or on our YouTube channel, they heard we were in Arkansas. And where we are at here right now, you know, there are people that say, oh, it's better other places, better climate, better politics, whatever. But my experience has been, you know, if you build your community, and if you go somewhere where you can find it, where we are at right now, coming from Europe, we just so are blown away over and over again. And I have to say, my wife is American, but she left America when she was 20, I think. So she had never really lived here much as an adult. So she also felt more European when we moved back, in a sense. So we both have just been blown away by the freedom and simplicity of things compared to the overregulated Germany, even though, you know, Americans would say, oh, it's way too, government is way too big and it's so overregulated here too. And yes, there's a case that can be made for that for sure. I agree. I see that more and more because I've been waking up to it coming from Europe. But it's just been such a refreshing time for us to see I can make an income and the government doesn't take everything away from me. I can, you know, there are a lot of Christians and a lot of stores that are run by Christians and I can support them. We can homeschool is the biggest one, right? There are way more people that fight for these things, you know, fight for the right, like a bill is being introduced in Tennessee to make homeschooling even better now, even more free. And that is just, it just feels so incredible to me to be in a place where you have that. I feel like, and I've realized that Europe is so far gone. The people have been so much raised by the government that the thinking, the mind, it's so programmed and so brainwashed. Unless God intervenes, there is no hope, in my opinion. And you know, I still see more hope here compared to that.
What I find fascinating is, you know, before you left to come to America, everyone was asking you, where do you think you'll end up? And I know y'all had lots of questions. And I know that initially, for whatever reason, you had the impression or the sense that, hey, we'd like to move to Tennessee. And then you got here, obviously you landed in Arizona with your family, and then you traveled a little bit and doors opened and closed and different things. And what's really fascinating is you ended up in Tennessee.
I know. And it was really weird for us at first that the door didn't open here, because that's what we had been praying about for like over 2 years. In fact, my wife's desire to live in Tennessee goes back to her childhood. She had somehow always loved Tennessee. And then we were in the area once in 2018 when we visited Polyface Farms. We actually drove through parts of Tennessee. And ever since then, that was a special place for us. And during the 2 years that it took for me to get my visa, we prayed about Tennessee a lot. So it was really weird for us that no door seemed to open at the time. And another door seemed to open in Arkansas, and that very painfully shut and kind of threw us into like a really hard time of brokenness where we were just crying out to God after. And then God just did so many miracles to bring us here.
And I think it speaks to God's plan and his timing. His timing is rarely ever our timing. But his plan is perfect. And where God leads, he provides. You know, I think you're a testament to that. And, you know, feel free to discuss as much of that as you want to. It's kind of an incredible story.
Yeah.
But feel free to discuss how much.
So, I don't want to go too much into, you know, what happened in Arkansas. I know people want to know, but it's really all that matters is that God shut that door and we had to leave. And it was very, very hard and very painful for us. And that was the third time in our life that we lost everything at that moment that we thought was happening, that we had kind of walked towards. And, you know, for the naturally minded person, that's an easy fix. You know, you're an idiot, don't do it again. But for a person that wants to trust in the Lord with all their heart and not lean on your own understanding, and who dares to step out in faith, even if they have gotten hurt in the past, who are willing to do that because they want to trust God, there's always the risk and the chance of getting hurt again. We had to, a few hours, leave. And we went back to Arizona, and it really threw us into just this time of complete brokenness, just before God, not knowing at all what was happening and why this happened again. And because we had done everything very prayerfully, very cautiously, in the counsel of many, we were in Arizona, and the weeks were passing by, and all we could do was really, and you know, and I'm not ashamed of saying that, but like cry and pray, you know, in a sense. Just call out to God what his next steps were. And you know, I started to work with a friend there a few days a week, did some tree service and arbor care work with him that helped me, you know, to have a buddy to talk to and to work a little. But I just didn't know, what am I going to do? How am I going to provide? Where am I going to go? Where are we going to go? So, you know, in these weeks, every possible scenario after the initial, you know, like shock or whatever you call it, every possible scenario just ran through my mind. It's like, do we find something in Arizona? You know, I mean, you for 10,000, you can buy like 5 acres in certain places there, you know, but then it's like what you eat and drink dust, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, do we, you know, where do we go? What do we do? I was like, do I get a job at Taco Bell? You know, like, I mean, like, what do I do? Where do I go? I was like wondering, God, do you, everything that you have put on our hearts with wanting to farm and also wanting to do a farming school, raising the next generation of Christian farmers, I felt like I'm probably not even capable of doing that. Like, God is done with me. He hasn't opened the door. And so it was a crazy time. And then on top of that, a few weeks into it, like Alex was saying, hey, I still love Tennessee, you know? And I was like, I can't even talk about it. Anything east of here, because we had this big trip east, you know, like where we really had driven from Arizona to North Carolina through all these states. And honestly, on that trip, Texas was our favorite state. But then this had happened, and I kind of associated all of that hard time with that whole trip east. So I couldn't even think of anything eastward, you know? So I even got mad at my wife for still liking Tennessee, you know, and she thinks it's so funny because she wasn't pushy or anything. I just had a problem in my heart about that whole thing. Well, God used the story of a family that we went to the theater and watched a movie, and it was the story of a family that went through loss, very great loss, and God brought them really low. And then he brought them out of that in a way only he can do. And God kind of used that, like I was a wreck throughout the whole movie, you know, because it felt like I was watching our story. And right after that, we went to a little cabin in the mountains in northern Arizona that friends own, and they said, hey, you can just go there. And we were there and we were praying and fasting and just seeking God, going on these walks, just talking and praying. And I told Alex, I think God's doing something in my heart about Tennessee. I told her the only thing that has been a constant in these last few years has been our prayer and desire to move to Tennessee. So let's just pray for that. So we spent like a day or so there just walking and praying and focusing on that. And then I told Alex, I think I'm just going to look for a job, you know. So I typed regenerative agriculture job, Tennessee. And one job came up And I clicked on it, and like the description was like made for me. You know, I was like livestock manager at this farm. I didn't know where the farm was. And the thing was, I looked at it and I was like, I've never applied for a job in my life. I've always been recommended by somebody. You know, I've either been in ministry or run my own business, or somebody told me, hey, he's a great guy, you have a job for him or whatever. So I didn't even know how to write a resume or to apply for a job. And I was scared to it. I was like, if I put in my resume, it says farming school, then a gap. During that time, he was at Bible college. He pastored a church a little bit here. He ran, like, it's so chopped up, you know, because we were missionaries and church planters in Sweden. And we had kind of the ministry and the missions work parallel to our farming and our YouTube channel. And so I was like, how am I even going to do this, you know? And I was like, you know what? I only have what I've got. So I used AI to help me write a resume.
That's not a bad idea.
You know, because I didn't even know how to do it. At least he can spell in English. I can't always do that, right? And then I created a double timeline, basically my Bible college and missions and ministry experience and pastoring parallel to the farming experience, right? And I was like, what the heck, you know? And I just sent it in and I was like, sure, I would never, ever hear back. Because this job had been out there for 30 days already. I was like, probably on the Thursday, they'll take down the ad or something. Well, the next day, I get an email back. And look, again, this is my first and only job I've ever applied for, okay? And so the next day, I get an email back. And the guy is like, the owner of the farm, he's like, hey, because so he saw where I had gone to Bible college in Germany, okay? This guy lives in Tennessee, and my former Bible college director, he's the one who ordained me as a pastor. He's a mentor of Alex and mine. He is the one who dedicated all my children as babies to the Lord. So very close friend. And so he writes back and says, hey, your Bible college director is a close friend of mine and my former pastor in California. And I was like, what? You know, I was like, you gotta be joking. Like, out of all places, you know, out of all people on this planet, right? So I try to phone my friend, you know, and mentor, but he called him first, right? And he was on a missions trip in Russia at the time. So he texts me, but he's like, hey, I just got a call from him. I can't talk right now, but I just want to let you know he's a very godly man, and I have no idea how you got in touch with him, but this could be a great fit. And so, long story short, a couple days later, he flew us out to meet him and his family and his farm. He looked at the credentials, the experience. We had some good chats here at the farm. And then he said, I would love to work with you. He made me a job offer during that trip. And we signed it before we headed back to Arizona. And in the beginning of June, I started the position as a farm and livestock manager at this farm. So there's more to it. All amazing. And one amazing thing is that this is a farm placed in an area with great influence, not just here, but in the entire nation. And it's an amazing work. We direct market everything, but then the vision is so much greater. Like in our first meeting, he said, building up this farm is first now, and the Christian farmer is second, you know? And so, yeah, there's just a lot going on here that we feel like the Lord is putting into place, something we've been praying for years and years, and that God is starting to do. And it's a great job. I'm able to provide for my family. And yeah.
Yeah. And what, from my experience and opinion, even what happened in Arkansas was an answer to prayer. Like just because you go to a place where it looks like the door is open, and in a sense, obviously it was, or you wouldn't be there. And God shuts the door and you experience hurt and loss, that doesn't mean that wasn't God's intention for all of that to happen. And it's part of the process, because I believe in the Christian life, God puts all of us at a minimum once in our life in the position that even if we're married and even if we have children and even if we have a great assembly to meet with, God puts us in a position personally where our only resource and ability is to count on Him and look to Him, and He will isolate us even in our own mind to bring us to the realization and the point where, look, I am your provision, and you have to look to me. And yes, I've given you a spouse and you're one flesh, and yes, I bless you with children and you have a responsibility to them. But in order for you to worship me in spirit and truth, I have to bring you to the place where you recognize that. And then you can grow. Then you can grow past that. And then you will be prepared for what I'm going to bless you with next. And I think that's very obvious in my opinion, and having experienced that in my life and then seeing this now, I think it's just really awesome. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the Lord's going to do, how He's going to use you all, how He's going to. Another thing that I think is really important, we've all experienced hurt from people, you know, and whether it's at a church or in a community or within a family or what have you, we've all experienced hurt. And many, many, especially in 2025, in this postmodern world we live in, many will use that as an excuse to become very reclusive and isolated and blame everybody but themselves. You know, they will blame all these people for hurting them, and it's their fault. And I mean, these are professing Christians, right? And
yes,
they will blame all these people, and they fail to recognize that God's in control and that God has orchestrated all of it. And the point of all of it is to honor and glorify God through it, and not to become calloused and hardened and reclusive and self-centered and easily offended over the tiniest shift of breeze, like just ready to be hurt again, you know, and just so ready to, oh, how's somebody going to do me dirty now? And how can I misinterpret what was just said so that it hurts my feelings, so that I can draw back even more into my shell of, you know, hurt and blame. And this way I can point fingers at everybody else and I don't have to grow. I don't have to reach out. I don't have to be kind. I don't have to push. I don't have to try. I don't have to give. I can just stay isolated. I can stay in my little corner. I can stay hurt, and I can just blame everybody. And that's what's even more beautiful about what God's doing in your life, is just restoring you, providing for you, continuing to open doors and avenues for you to help others and to focus on your family and homeschool your children and teach them. You know, they're learning this exact same thing through this process, which it as important as it is for us to learn these things, these critical life lessons, it's that much more important for our children to learn these things. And honestly, you know, culturally and societally, and we're ride or die homeschoolers, and we've been doing it from Jump Street, you know, from the very beginning. But you know, there's lots of jokes in the homeschool world about how weird and goofy homeschool kids are, and like comedians have written songs about it. And stereotypes are true for a reason in different things. And there are a lot of weird, socially awkward homeschool kids, but this is a major reason why. okay? Because people become so isolated and reclusive, and they do. Hey, we all get hurt. You will suffer trials, tribulations, persecutions in this life. I mean, it's promised to us, and we have to respond in a biblical way. We have to grow through it. We have to grow past it. And I can't wait, man, to just hear the rest of your story, see what the Lord's going to do. I think it's really exciting. I think it's encouraging. And that's why I was really glad that you wanted to come back on and kind of update everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, our story is in many ways a story of redemption, forgiveness of what God has done. And, you know, I said earlier, we have been three times at the place in our life where we kind of lost everything and we're just at a place of brokenness. God has restored most of those relationships and brought forgiveness, you know, to the point that only He can. And, you know, what you say is so, so important. It's the most important thing of everything, because it's so easy to judge people and families and their journey that they are on, especially if it's in the public light, right? And honestly, the reason why our channel is dying and we kind of dropped off is because there were so many things that we were walking through as a family and before God that we couldn't share. And we didn't want to share also for the protection of ourselves, but for the protection of everybody else that was involved as well. You know, it's so easy to judge, but, you know, you could do that to the stories in the Bible, like to Joseph, right? Like, look at Joseph. So easy to judge. And then he thinks it's going somewhere, right? He's going to Potiphar's house and then it crashes again and lands in prison again. And or David, the ups and downs, the downfalls. And I always think what you mentioned, you know, I always think of Jesus. Who was ever hurt more than Him? Who was ever misunderstood more than Him? Mistreated, taken advantage of more than Him? Yet He kept a soft heart, right? He kept loving. And it's so, like we live in this world right now where I see a move where many people are conservative without biblical values. You know, what you just mentioned, we need to have this biblical foundation in all of this. What is Christ calling us to? He's calling us to be the light of the world. He's calling us to be the salt of the world. He's calling us to go out and preach to everybody. And Jesus said, this is one of the most profound things, by this people will know that you are my disciples. And you would think He would say, by how much you love me. But He didn't say that. You know, because that's so easy to say, I don't like the church. I just love Jesus, right? But Jesus said, by this people will know you're my disciples by how much you love each other. And that is so genius because it's impossible now to say, I don't go to church. You know, I struggle with, like, I don't have fellowship. I withdraw myself. I isolate myself. It doesn't work that way. You know, we are not called to that as Christians. In 2019, I aired a little ebook where I shared some of my testimony, and I shared in there how I was so hurt as a teenager already by society and by people that I just wanted to, like my dream, my vision was to move to Alaska or Northern Canada, live in a log home, and not have anything to do with any human anymore. I was so done and fed up, and God just convicted me greatly about that, you know, that that's not what we are called to as followers of Christ. You know, we are called to not be of the world, but be in the world. And, you know, that's the hardest part is this over and over again, lay your heart on the chopping block, knowing somebody will stab it. And I think that Christ's mention of to take up your cross and follow Him, I think that's what it's talking about. You know, many people talk about things that happen to them. Oh, you know, it's just my cross that I have to bear. No, those are things that fall upon you. I don't want to belittle those, right? But those are things that fall on you. Taking up your cross is a choice. That's something that you actively, it's not something that you can't do anything about that falls upon you, but it's something that you choose to do to follow Christ. And I think that's a lesson. You know, are you willing to die to self over and over again before others, you know, before yourself? And ultimately, I think that's the only way God will get glory through a human being is through that process, however hard that is, you know. So
I think it's the whole point, right? Because you made the best point of what did Christ suffer and what did Christ sacrifice? And as Christians, we are supposed to be Christ-like, and he modeled for us, you know, how we should act, how we should interact, what we should do. And Christ lived a perfectly, completely selfless life. He literally gave his life, his blood, every fiber of his being. And if we are to follow him, we will have to do the same. And we can't allow hurt and shame and embarrassment. And if we hold all of the things that happen to us and we look at them in the light of Christ, like, have we lost as much as Christ? Has we been embarrassed? I mean, to hang naked, you know, in front of the entire world. I mean, have we been that embarrassed? You know, have we been hurt that severely? Besides the fact that we serve the same Christ that shed his blood and covered us and paid our redemption in his blood, that he covered all of that for us. So
yeah,
we should, to such a greater extent, be able to push through and go past all of that to be the light and to be the salt that is needed to affect change and to lead and to guide and to counsel. You know, it's so critical, and it's critically what is missing in society. And I realize there's a lot of hopium. I'm not smoking the hopium. I'm definitely, you know, I'll be thankful for the good that comes. I'll be very thankful for it. And I hope that there's more good than I think's going to come. I hope that I'm being too pessimistic. But regardless, I mean, this is the point. As Christians, we are pilgrims passing through, and we should live our entire life regardless, you know, regardless of the winds that change and blow, and regardless of the political inclinations, right? We should live in a way that it's irrelevant, to the point of it's not going to affect what I do day to day. It's not going to affect the way that I decide to lead and raise and train my family. It's not going to affect my financial decisions, because all of my decisions have been made. And just because there's different talking heads, and just because there's different political people saying different things, it's not going to change the decisions I make, because my decisions are fundamentally founded upon Scripture.
Yes.
And a God that does not change. So, like, my decisions aren't going to change just because some political winds and there may be some good vibes out there. But, you know, regardless, you know, we keep pressing forward. We keep moving on. We keep leading our family, pointing our wives and children in the direction that we think that the Lord is leading. And, you know, that other stuff, we'll take all the wins. We'll take all the positive stuff. We'll take all the beneficial stuff, any kind of tax breaks or any kind of deconstruction of bureaucracy. I'll take all of it. But regardless of all of that, fundamentally, our lives and our decisions will continue to move in the direction that God is leading us and that God's lined out, you know, regardless of who's running the, supposedly running the ship.
Yeah, we cannot outsource the families and the church's job to anybody else.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very well said. So you're in Middle Tennessee.
Yes.
You are managing a farm, doing some husbandry. So maybe if you can talk about it a little bit, what's the size of the farm and what are you doing? What kind of animals?
Yeah. So it's a bunch of forest. I don't even know, but 55 acres of pasture. We're running what we call a flurd. It's a mix of a flock of sheep and a herd of cattle on the land. The sheep are more the goal to really have a good pasture, grass-fed, grass-finished lamb production. We'll see what happens with the cattle. But then we are also running a couple egg mobiles with pastured layers. We have a buyer's club we are selling to, and we're also selling to a local store or through a local store here in the area. And yeah, we did pastured broilers and Thanksgiving turkeys pastured this last year. So we'll see. We are in the holistic planning phase for this season. Right now it's forestry work, even though I got a back injury right now. But yeah, there's we have a head vegetable grower. He supplies vegetable boxes from spring through fall to a buyer's club. I'm the livestock and paddock manager officially, even though I do manage other things like the forest, and we're starting to get into the water retention and ponds now. Then I have a farmhand that works with me, and it's a big blessing. My family is coming in to work once or twice a week as well, and
very cool.
Gets to be there.
So what kind of cows and sheep are you running?
So we are running hair sheep, a parasite-resistant hair sheep, similar to Greg Judy's, and that is known from YouTube. We actually have some of his sheep, but ours were better. Might be a shocker. We had a bunch, and this past summer we got some. Having said that, he auctions off his best ones. We didn't get those. We bought the ones that had a fixed price. So I don't think we got Greg Judy's top genetics, right? But ours were better, so we actually... It was an expensive thing to go through, but we called most of them again because they were just by far not as good as our own stock. And then we have some that are more for, like, holistically seen, more important for the owner, some longhorns.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for meat, we have South Pole. That's also the type of cattle that Greg Judy runs, a small framed cow that finishes really well on grass. So we have a few of those expecting the first calves now this April.
So are the longhorns more pasture art?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's good. There's
Instagram stars for publicity and nice to look at. Hard to deal with.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we're very familiar with the longhorn, and you definitely don't want to, you know, I'm very thankful for the Longhorn and all that they did.
Yes.
Post-Civil War.
Yeah.
And what they did for the state. But yeah, if you're raising beef that you want to sell, you don't want it to be Longhorn, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, they have a temperament. I've worked with Highland cattle before, and to me, the bigger the horns, the more temperament and there is in hierarchy among them. You know, I mean, they beat up the South Pole cows at first. Mm-hmm. They just like, you are not walking past my 7-foot-wide horns, you know? It's like, okay.
Yeah, and the most challenging stuff for us is just trying to load them on and off a trailer. I mean, it is like, because ours were very friendly, very docile, but it's just like, how are we going to load these things? So, it's a challenge.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and then we have a mixed, like one of these colorful egg flocks, you know, you get all shades from white to blue and brown and everything. So people like that, I guess.
And so everything, relatively speaking, is kind of being sold locally?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, that's great.
I would say my guess is 80% within a 15-mile radius. Or I would probably 100% within a 15 or 20 mile radius.
Wow, that is so great. And it's so great for the community. The community can have highly valuable food, and then the money is staying within the community. So it's making the community more resilient.
Yeah, and we're all about that.
Yeah, these are the solutions that are required for society if we're going to continue to provide food for one another, and we're going to continue to exist. And I just did, it's happening so much. I just did a quick short the other day. There's a solar farm north of here, and every time I drive by it, I get so infuriated because it used to be a cow pasture.
Yeah.
And now it's like thousands of solar panels, and it's just Bedouin desolate.
Yep.
And another, a large dairy farm north of here just sold, and they're going to convert this thing into a solar farm. And it's such a crock, for one, and it's so destructive.
Yes.
And it's just diminishing returns. And as people, we have to be educated about this and understand how incredibly destructive it is, how backwards it is. You know, I was just explaining, like, you know, these, we will never, no one will ever get the power that it took to fabricate and create these solar panels.
Right.
And compound that with the fact that cows are no longer grazing in this pasture and improving it and helping it. It's so multiply destructive. And, you know, we have to be cognizant of that. And you want to know why food is hyperinflating? You want to know why eggs are so expensive? You want to know why the price of beef is going up? Because of junk like that is
land,
why.
Land prices and everything, yeah.
Land prices, yeah, because they're paying super top dollar to lure these people out of the ranching industry, letting them cash out, and then they're going to destroy the property. And I mean, at a minimum, they could have set these solar panels, even though I think it's a hoax, like they could have set these solar panels up higher and kept the cows out there.
On
and they could have
and next to freeways and whatever, You see, the thing is, let's set everything aside with construction cost and looks. If you just compare, if you had a field full of solar panels and you had a field full of healthy living plants, right? Both are supposed to capture the energy from the sun. But it is only the energy that living plants can catch from the sun through the roots, into the soil, and then to all other living beings that can sustain life, right?
Yeah.
The solar panel cannot do that, and the plants are so much more effective at it. Yeah, to see this, and honestly, it's a completely politically driven thing. If politics would have stayed out of it, I don't think we would see it to that extent.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, if there wasn't all these subsidies, at a minimum, if the bureaucracy and politics and the government stayed out of it, at a minimum, it would be incredibly much more cost effective and inexpensive for all of us to participate in, at a minimum. But other than that, what fuels this frenzy and buying premium dirt to put these things on is all this government subsidy and all this Solyndra, Tesla solar roofing and all this stuff, all these government contractors that get these trillions to just slosh around and destroy the infrastructure that is required to sustain human life.
Yeah. It's, I think, a big struggle right now, and that's a whole nother episode worth of talking about. But, you know, the cost of land and what's happening, I mean, it's just nuts. It's completely crazy.
And I'm, you know, I am convinced, having one been in the financial field and experiencing the dot-com bubble and then experiencing the 08 bubble, I am convinced this real estate bubble has been designed to pop. And I believe that those that are in a position to take advantage of it, I think it's going to be a great opportunity. I just remember in 08, and it was exactly like 99, like, this can't continue to do this. Like, this just can't continue to happen. And eventually, one day, in the matter of an hour or three, it doesn't. You know, in a matter of minutes, it pops.
Yep.
And it's cataclysmic, and then there's opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that will happen. And my goal and hope is that it's just not BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard that get a chance to take advantage of that opportunity, but that people that are looking to beneficially provide for themselves and for their community will be in a position to take advantage of that when that correction comes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's our dream and heart still to someday have our own. But, you know, I don't know, humanly seen, I don't know if we'll ever be able to afford that. But it's also, I am at peace right now with where God has me and how he will have me serve. You know, this is, we have a great job, great freedom where we work right now. And, you know, I think it's also, I hope I wish for so many people that land will become available more affordably for them. But I think for me, I know that it'll be a gift from God to us if that door opens up. And also, I need to keep reminding myself that my eternity is somewhere else, you know?
Yeah.
And like Jesus talked so much about gathering a treasure in heaven, you know, and I see people around me. We live, it's so ironic because when we originally had prayed about Tennessee, we had prayed about going to one of the poorest counties in the entire United States in Northeast Tennessee to serve among the people there. For some reason, God brought us now to one of the richest and wealthiest counties in the entire United States, where we're at right now. And the stuff that's being built around us, you know, it's just unbelievable. Like the money that people pour into things here, you know. And sometimes you're just wondering, you know, like, I mean, I don't know what I would do if I was in that position with that kind of, those kind of means financially. But, you know, I just keep getting reminded of the fact that our inheritance is somewhere else and we're passing through.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. And, you know, we're in a different position and time in our life. And it's interesting because God's always blessed us financially. And when I was younger, you know, you would want to have these trinkets and these earthly treasures and the fast car and all that stuff and the big, nice house. And it's offensive. Like, I don't begrudge anyone of having anything. I certainly do not covet what they have. But to me, even though we have the means to do some of these things, it's offensive and wasteful to me. I would not do it. Like buying a brand new vehicle. Like, we have the ability to pay cash for a brand new vehicle, and we need a new vehicle. But I refuse to buy a new vehicle. It's offensive for me to waste because I have children, and because we have future plans for them and we want to help them. It would be so punitive to them for us to waste our money on that. And it's just so interesting how as you grow and change and the Lord teaches you things, you just rethink your thinking and you think about it completely differently. And all your goals and your priorities change. And, you know, and it's neat to see other people go through that process. And, you know, I believe that the Lord's going to give you the desires of your heart, and he's going to make a way, and he's going to do all that. It's a new year. It's 2025. What do y'all see for this year on the farm and everything? Is there any new goals or any plans for expansion or anything there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are always trying out new things at the farm, but it, you know, one thing that we have realized as a family, we have a lot of vision and a lot of passion, and we don't want to neglect the call that comes along with that on our lives. But we've also noticed just how insane our life has been in the last few years, and the need to just live through a season where we are not facing existential fears all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I would not want to change the life that we have lived with anything, but it has been challenging, you know. If I share my entire testimony, it's a powerful story of walking in faith and God providing, but we are not these heroes of faith. Been broken a lot, we were scared a lot, we were just on the ground waiting for God to provide, and he did, you know, but it leaves a toll on you. You know, I think there's a reason why, you know, Jesus was 33 when he was done, you know, like, and we are, for the first time in our lives now, financially not having existential fears constantly. This is the first time in our lives since we've been married, and we are arriving. And we're starting to build a household, and we're starting to get the kids settled in a solid homeschooling environment. We were, you know, we came out of Austria where we were fearing for our freedom during COVID, where we were threatened with high fines, and they were purposefully spreading rumors about imprisonment even. the media did that. And for a while, people didn't know, hey, if you don't get the jab, you might go to prison. We were basically living in hiding for over a year. I can speak about this now. In Austria, under the radar, not having the kids in the school system to protect them because of this evil that was going on there. We were, you know, I mean, we had a flight plan, fleeing to a neighboring country, escaping, all that set up. And it was already in Sweden. We had similar fears. We had experienced children being removed from their parents, from families. It's something that repeatedly happened in Sweden. If Swedish or Austrian people will watch this or hear this, they will be mad and angry at me, but it's the truth. Sweden has been several times accused in front of the European Court for human rights, for torturing people mentally by removing the children from them. We saw it ourselves with the family we knew. We were afraid that something like that could happen because they target, it says religious minorities, and we know that that's a synonym for Christians when they passed that law in the 90s already. And we lived in fear that we had to bring to God under many years in Sweden. And that's one of the reasons we left the country. If you flow with the government and are a government puppet, you're completely fine. You can live probably the most comfortable life of any country in the world in Sweden. But if you don't, it's miserable. And so we experienced it there. We experienced it in Austria. And while we have big vision and passion and want to do things, God kind of has taken a little bit the wind out of our sails right now to be like,
sure.
Rest, breathe, get established at a family. Enjoy having like-minded people around you, making friends, having other people care for you, be blessed. And that's a hard thing to learn as well when you have been pushing, you know.
Yeah, there are seasons to life. You know, I think we actually mentioned it last time. You know, there's seasons to life. Just like there's seasons to a year, and you can't always be planting, you can't always be harvesting, and we all have different seasons. And then as individuals, we can all be in a different season just according to God's plan. And I think that is a brilliant idea, is to just slow down, reflect, rest, heal, plan, and wait, you know?
Yeah.
And,
despite the miracles, go ahead.
You're good. No, go for it.
I'm like, despite all the miracles that God did to bring us here and how he did that, you know, it's still a new country, a new state, a new neighborhood, a new job, a new church. It's everything new, right? And my wife and I, we lived in Europe for, you know, like 16 years or something. So I mean, I'm first now starting to be able to drive without a GPS, you know, like it's people don't understand that. I mean, I don't have a place. I haven't had a place that I call home or, you know, consider home anywhere. And we are wanting to make this that, you know, and then and you know this better than anybody, but when you go somewhere to start over where you do not have family and friends, it's different. Right? Because if you are living anywhere near where your uncles are and your brothers are and your family is, I mean, Uncle Dan will always pull you out of the ditch or change your tire if you're, you know what I mean? But if you go somewhere and you start over entirely, it's a lot of work and it comes with its own challenges. And I guess, you know, I'm not complaining. We are super blessed, but we're just in that process of getting established. That has been our prayer. It's like, you know, establish our family, establish the work of our hands, and we're starting to build community and starting to learn again what it's like to live a normal life, so to speak, you know.
That is awesome. Well, as we wrap up, are there any closing thoughts or ideas that you kind of want to leave us with?
I would want to encourage every listener, no matter what God is calling them to, whether it's homesteading or software engineering or whatever it is, to live radically and fully for Christ. That's what we need in these last days. I just listened to somebody the other day who is an Israeli but born again Christian, and he lives in Israel, and he was asked, how can we best pray for Israel and support Israel? And his answer, I thought, was like the best answer he could have possibly given. He said, study the Word of God and know your Bible. And I feel like that's just my encouragement to everybody. We live in a time where it's a pandemic among people who call themselves Christians to not know the Bible. Mm-hmm. And all of our actions, whether it's homesteading or voting or eating or homeschooling, they need to be based on the truth. Jesus prayed to the Father, your word is truth. And that is my, I guess, my exhortation to everybody. That's all that matters. And if we do that, then I think there's hope for the world and for revival.
Well, I couldn't have said that any better myself. And Simeon, it has been a blessing and an encouragement. And I hope this has been an encouragement to y'all. And if y'all appreciate our content, go on over to thetexasboys.com and check us out. Simeon, every guest gets a gift. Do you drink coffee?
I do.
If you were to drink coffee, do you do whole bean or ground?
We grind the whole beans. We buy whole beans
okay.
and grind
them. So you like whole bean. Would you like a light, medium, or a dark roast?
Dark.
Dark roast. Okay, so what I'm going to do is, yeah, so we have the beans. So we sell it in ground or beans. We even sell a lot of people like the K-cups or the pods. So we sell the pods too. But I'm going to send you a bag of our dark roast as a thank you for coming on.
Yeah, hey, look, and if you want to do this a weekly thing, I'm all good.
Yeah, sure. This way you'll never have to buy coffee again.
I have my monthly subscription ready.
Well, we will definitely have you back on. It's always a great conversation, and we appreciate you and your family. We hope that we get to meet y'all again and
yes.
hang out in fellowship. It was a huge blessing, and I want to thank all y'all for listening or watching wherever you are, and we will see you on the next show.